From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. As always, I'm Justin Spears here with Dominic Pacheco. We are jumping back into the studio talking some Arizona Wildcats basketball. By the way, before we get into the nitty gritty, you can download this podcast on the Wildcaster app. You can also subscribe to the pod on Apple Podcasts. Now, Dom, Arizona splitting the Oregon schools. They lost to Oregon on Thursday. They take down Oregon State on Saturday. I got to get your quick thoughts on just this weekend.
What an eventful two games. I mean, could more have happened with, I mean, they won one and lost one, but that aside, you have Chase Jeter, you have everything going on in Arizona's, in their front court. I mean, it's just been, it's been a weekend. It's been a weekend.
Where do we start? Where do we start? I think we should start with what you just said right there. I think with Chase Jeter, that's the biggest headline, or at least the one that's getting talked about the most right now. And I think it's the most talked about, or at least it's the most important one, because he's Arizona's starting center. Arizona was already undersized going into this season, and we talked about this all year long. If Chase Jeter goes down, Arizona's screwed. I mean, they're in trouble.
They're done. They're effectively down. I mean, if he goes down, you're looking at, I mean, you give him virtually no chance of making the tournament.
So Chase Jeter, he was going up for, I think he was trying to go up for a putback because Dylan Smith had a layup. I think he thought that Dylan Smith was going to miss it, so he wanted to be right there to clean it up. And as soon as he went up for it, Trace Tinkle undercut him unintentionally, by the way. It was just a freaky play.
Absolutely.
And Chase Jeter went over the top of Trace Tinkle and pretty much went from the bottom of the backboard straight to the ground and landed right on his back. It did not look good. You could tell as soon as he landed, you're like, oh, that's a hard fall. And as on your back, for a big man, especially when you're 6'11", I mean, that's a pretty hard fall. And he was on the ground for a little bit. And when he was, you know, laying there, I thought, okay, he's just a little, you know, rattled right now. He's going to get up. He's going to walk back over to the bench. Everything's going to be all good. And then he continued to lay there, and I thought, man, this is bad. This is very, very bad. And he gets up. Justin Kokoski, the lead trainer, then directs him over to the, hey, walk through this tunnel. It's not the tunnel that Arizona usually comes out of. It's the tunnel that Oregon State comes out of, but it was the closest tunnel. And he said, hey, walk to this tunnel. Started walking, and that was the rest of Chase Jeter. We didn't see him until the second half, where the team came out, Sean Miller came out, and then Chase Jeter was right behind him. So that was a good sign for Arizona. Dom, how do you look at Chase Jeter's injury? What was your thoughts as soon as he went down?
My jerk reaction was that it wasn't good. I mean, it wasn't a gruesome injury, like a leg snapping injury that's like makes you sick to your stomach watching, no. But it was tough to watch because it, you know, when I'm trying to paint a picture of it here, you know, when head injuries, when a player goes down in football, for instance, a player goes down and then the head comes back and snaps into the turf.
Oh yeah.
It was Chase Jeter, that almost happened to Chase Jeter's back. He came down so hard, flat on his back, no bracing himself whatsoever, and you can kind of see him hit, and then he kind of bounced up and hit again because he came down so hard. I mean, he's fallen almost 10 feet from that rim, and it didn't look good. I was worried about Chase Jeter because he's had problems with his back. Of course, he had a disc problem at Duke that cut his season short there before transferring to Arizona, and it's just not a fun thing to see. And I mean, obviously any back injuries are worrisome. It was good to see him walk off on his own power. And it was good to see him come back and sit on the bench for the whole second half. But again, if Arizona loses Chase Jeter, it would be terrible. Of course, Sean Miller said post game that he suffered back spasms and that is why they held him out. Whether it was a precautionary thing, whether it was something serious, we don't know. Again, back spasms can be severe. They can be something minor that's just kind of a thorn in your side. But Essentially, Miller said, and Justin, you were at the press conference, so correct me or add to here, but essentially said that he doesn't know if he's going to be ready for USC, but he's quote-unquote hopeful that Chase Jeter is back next week. We saw it against Oregon State, and I think it's why the Oregon State win was so big, because Oregon State already has kind of came out as one of the best teams in the Pac-12, at least the first couple weeks. So it was already going to be a big win for Arizona if they could pull it out at home, avoid the sweep at the hands of the Oregon schools. But to do it without your best player, without your only consistent source of offense down low and at times at all, I think it proved a lot for Arizona, not only in the sense that they could win. Again, I'm not saying they can win without Chase Jeter long term. I think if he's out long term, they're going to be hurting. But it was good to see them fight. They were resilient down the stretch, and they pulled it out in the second half when Oregon State got close.
And Oregon State, they did cut it close.
Four points.
Trace Tinkle got going. Mm-hmm. He was doing everything for Oregon State. And then, of course, you still have, you know, Ethan and Steven Thompson. And you know, Oregon State was... they were pretty much shooting themselves back into the game, similar to the other night when they played ASU. You know, ASU, they were up by, 13, I think it was? I looked at the score and I was like, oh, okay, ASU's blowing out Oregon State. Mm-hmm. Tough loss for the Beavers. And I checked back into the game on stat broadcast as we're doing, you know, post-game stuff for the Arizona-Oregon game. And I look, I'm like, whoa. It's a two-minute game. Or there's 2 minutes left in the game, and it's only a one-point game. Like, okay. Oregon State make it interesting because they shot themselves back into the game, mainly with Trace Tinkle. And that's where I was like, oh, man. The same thing that Oregon State did to ASU is going to happen to Arizona, but the Beavers are actually going to capitalize this time rather than just let the game fall through their fingers. And when I look back at this past weekend and I compare the Oregon State game and the Oregon game for Arizona, the shots that Arizona took against Oregon State, they were falling. Where you look back at the shot selection against Oregon, none of the shots were falling. And I think a part of that was mainly because the three-pointers that they took, a lot of them were kind of uncontested. Mm-hmm. Where Oregon, they always had a defender in their face, and Oregon did a good job of playing tough zone defense and also full court pressing. So there was always somebody right there contesting no matter what you put up. And I thought Oregon State, they didn't do as well of a job as Oregon did. But with that being said, Arizona, they were still able to knock down some shots. And the ball definitely bounced their way against the Beavers.
Oregon State took 18 fewer shots than Arizona on Saturday night and made two fewer buckets.
Wow.
They shot 51% from the field and lost a large, pretty much what that, the numbers that make up for that are Arizona's 13 three-pointers, season high for the Wildcats, and two Oregon State's 4 of 17 shooting from beyond the arc. So Oregon State was hitting shots. They were efficient, a lot more efficient than Arizona was. Arizona shot 40% from the field. But looking at their, for Oregon State, let's throw this in here. I think this is more of a blip in the road than it is a signal of their standing in the Pac-12 this year. I still think they're a top four team. I still think they have an inside shot at a bye in the Pac-12 tournament, and they're 1-34 at McHale Center since 1983. Jeez. And I don't even know when the last time they swept. Last time they won in Arizona was 2010, Sean Miller's first year. So it's been a while since they've done well on the Arizona road trip. It doesn't bode well for them because it sets them back a little bit. They got to bounce back now and show that they're capable of doing that. But they got talent. I think they'll be okay. Mm-hmm. For Arizona, what concerns me about their inefficiency in the Oregon and OSU games, in the Oregon game, they shot 13 of 30 on two-point shots. That's 43.3%. And we all know how poorly they shot against Oregon.
Sean Miller
compared it to the Baylor game, and we all know how
that's
that
bad.
Ended.
That's bad.
Exactly. You don't want to be compared to the Baylor game many more times this season. If you do, it's probably not a good thing. It probably results in a loss. Against Oregon State, they weren't much better. 14 of 40, 35%. They weren't better. It was worse. So, look, those are two-pointers. That's, granted, a lot of that against Oregon State is without Chase Jeter, but... they're not finding much wiggle room inside, and I think that goes back again. Oregon and Oregon State are two of the better defenses they're going to face in the Pac-12, one and first and fourth respectively coming into this weekend. So I think when you see those zone defenses, Arizona's going to have to result in, look, getting up those threes. They hit 13 threes today. You cut that in half and they lose handily in this game.
Yeah.
So it's, they're a really streaky team. I don't think you can trust them in any game this year, whether it's home, whether it's the road. You can't trust what they're going to do, because if they're not shooting well from beyond the arc and people are zoning up on them, Sean Miller has proved time and time again that Arizona doesn't really have a solution. And Miller talked a little bit after the Oregon game about Arizona being better against the zone this year, and they've been passing the ball a little bit better, and they've looked okay inside, but as far as scoring inside, they haven't done a good job at all. And granted, mm-hmm. Oregon State, you're going against Kyler Kelly, who's the top shot blocker in the country, and there's a lot of variables here, but Arizona's not getting it done inside. They're shooting poorly, and it's because they don't have the size. I mean, a lot of it is because they don't have the size. They have Chase Jeter, and that's all. So when he goes down, and guys like Ira Lee and Ryan Luther, who, by the way, we should get to, Luther is not against Oregon State. Yeah. But when Arizona's not clicking on threes, they're gonna have a rough go of things.
Well, and I included this in the Seen and Heard story. They out rebounded Oregon State by double digits, and they also had a season high in offensive rebounds, and which went to 28 second chance points for Arizona. And yet Oregon State still outscored them in the paint. I mean, think about this. If they didn't get any of those offensive rebounds or any of those second chance points, we're looking at this game of Oregon State dominating Arizona in, down low in the post. Can you imagine that? Did you ever think at some point in time that you would say, oh, look at the Beavers just dominating the Arizona Wildcats down low in the post?
That's in the paint. They outscored Arizona by 14 in the paint. They dominated Arizona in the paint.
Exactly.
But it's tough to say that because Arizona dominated on the rebounds.
Exactly.
And Oregon shot better. Arizona shot better from three. So it's hard to evaluate. It's just, again, we've said it time and time again on podcasts. It's just the state of the Pac-12. It's impossible to predict. It's all over the place. There's no consistency. But yeah, I mean, Arizona's getting beat inside, and they haven't had this rebounding margin in a while. So it's good to see that if you're an Arizona fan, but, points in the paint. I mean, I don't know how that happens. You out rebound someone like Arizona did, by 12 and get beat by 16 in points in the paint. So it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't add up. And that's why I say tonight kind of actually proves it in some way. My theory that the X factor for Arizona isn't necessarily Chase Jeter. I've always said this. Wherever Arizona goes, or wherever Brandon Randolph goes, it's where Arizona goes.
Mm-hmm.
He had a mild game tonight. It wasn't his best performance. But the point being is people always say, oh, Chase Jeter, he's the guy. Arizona absolutely needs him. Arizona does. They do need them. Or they do need a Chase Jeter, because if they want to even think about making the NCAA tournament, they need him at the forefront. But they also need great guard play, and they didn't get that against Oregon. Brandon Randolph had a terrible night. Then he then follows it up with a mild night of kind of typical Brandon Randolph night. He did he score in double digits again?
About Oregon State?
Against Oregon State.
Oregon, he did not. Oregon State, yes. He had 10, 5 of 15 from the field, 0 of 4 from 3.
It was very mild, but Justin Coleman only had 2 points against Oregon, if I'm not mistaken. He had 3 points against Oregon.
He had 3 on the opening possession, then didn't score until the second half of the Oregon State game, if I'm not mistaken.
Then he goes off for double digits against Oregon State at 14, and then 5 assists. He joined the 1,000-point club, 1,000 career points as a collegiate player.
We can call it a club, right?
Yeah, club. It's a club.
A 1,000 points is a good achievement. Yeah. If that's 1,000 more points than I have in college basketball. Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, rest in peace to his late aunt, who he dedicated that game to because she died in November, and he played with a little extra juice on Saturday because it was the same day as his aunt's birthday, who died in November. So rest in peace to Justin Coleman's aunt. Hell of a game for Justin Coleman that night. I thought it was awesome tribute to his late aunt. But with that being said, he's the co-captain for a reason. He is the facilitator, the orchestrator, the senior veteran point guard that they rely on, especially in late game situations, whether it's, you know, he's had a couple clutch three-pointers in this season, mm-hmm. but how he does defensively and how he gets the offense going, that's kind of the underrated aspect of Justin Coleman that I don't think a lot of people talk about. But he had a great game against Oregon State, especially in the second half. He was starting to knock down some three-pointers. But Dylan Smith, Ryan Luther, like, Arizona is at its best when you have these...
When they're knocking down shots.
when they're knocking down shots, but when you have these upperclassmen, like the Ryan Luthers, Justin mm-hmm. Coleman's of the world, or even a Dylan Smith who's been with the program for a couple years now, or a few years mm-hmm. now, when those guys are clicking, that's when Arizona's at its best. And we saw that Saturday night against Oregon State.
I'll circle back to Justin Coleman because I think his contribution on Saturday night was huge, and I think they need more of that moving forward to be as successful as they want to be. But I want to go back to Ryan Luther for a moment because he hasn't been, I think, I don't think he's been what Arizona's brought him in to be. He hasn't really been that significant in any area, rebounding, offense, anything. I mean, any area you want to look at, I don't think he's made that big of an impact.
No.
But Saturday night, he stepped up. He had his first double-double in a red and blue jersey, and he came up big when Arizona needed him most. When Chase Jeter went out, Ryan Luther was inserted as... Did he start center in the second half?
Yeah.
He started as the center, and he got the job done. That rebounding margin that Arizona beat Oregon State by was in large part to Ryan Luther.
He had 7 offensive rebounds.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's big time for a team that struggles offensively on the offensive board. So, it's big for Ryan Luther if he has those kind of nights, more often. Well, I'm sure it's what Arizona wants, but
when he came into Arizona mm-hmm. and Miller already said he's our starting power forward, you know, Ryan Luther's our guy. I didn't expect him to put up these great numbers. But I did think that he was going to be able to be consistent. Just be consistent. That's all Arizona needs from you. You're a graduate transfer power forward. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is average 10 and 7 a night. If you could do that, you'll be great. And there will be times where I forget he's even in the game. But Saturday night against Oregon State, that was Ryan Luther's game. He definitely needed a game like that. He was hitting shots. How many three-pointers? I'm not looking at the stats right now. Did he have any three-pointers? I believe he did.
Ryan Luther had two against Oregon State.
Yeah, he had two. He had two three-pointers, and he was rebounding the ball. And that was the Ryan Luther that Arizona brought in. That was Pittsburgh Ryan Luther, a guy that was able to get a double-double and be the leader on the team when they needed him the most. And as soon as Chase Jeter went down, that's the first thing that came to my mind is, how is Ryan Luther going to respond? I already know what Ira Lee is going to do. And Ira Lee, he played a stretch from like the 15-minute mark as soon as Chase Jeter went down. He played from the 15-minute mark to the 5-minute mark. I'm mm-hmm. like, you got to give this guy a break. This guy's been playing 10 straight minutes. But Ryan Luther was able to kind of step in and be like, hey, listen, you do you, Ira Lee. Get some rest. I'm going to do me. And I thought, especially in the second half, you started to see Ryan Luther's confidence grow. And I'm not saying Chase Jeter is going to be out, but Ryan Luther needed a game like that, because if Arizona's going to rely on him a lot in L.A., you got to have his confidence up, and I definitely think that he got his confidence
up. And you and I, Justin, have talked off the airwaves about Ryan Luther's confidence level and why he's in the starting lineup as opposed to on the bench, and he's better coming off the bench. I mean, if he can have a game like he did tonight, have that confidence, and bring it off the bench, it's huge, because he's been a better player all year off the bench. You talked a little bit about what Ryan Luther does when he's not scoring necessarily, when you forget he's on the floor, I believe is how you put it.
Yeah.
You look at contributions of guys who aren't necessarily having the best nights of their life, and Arizona hasn't really had a lot of it this year, where they're either hot You've seen Brandon Randolph blow up and be unconscious from 3-point range.
4 3-pointers.
Exactly. Yeah. 4 3-pointers in a matter of minutes. And you've seen him go 1 for 8 in 2 games like he has the last couple games and be kind of non-existent. Ryan Luther's, I mean, that's the thing with Randolph is he's always going to get buckets. He's always going to get shots up. So you'll see that a lot from him. But Ryan Luther's a guy, like you said, you can forget he's on the court. A good example of contributing when you're not having your best night was Zylan Cheatham on ASU the other night against Oregon State in a win over Oregon State. He didn't have his best game. He had 7 turnovers and only shot 3 of 6 from the field, but he had 13 rebounds. He had 6 assists. He got to the line a handful of times. He was making contributions and they needed him on the court. He wasn't having a good night. He was making a lot of mistakes, but he was also adding a lot to what they were doing and Arizona State won. So when Arizona's struggling, they need guys that can step up and make contributions when they're not scoring or when Justin Coleman's not necessarily dishing the ball off like he is on a regular night. They need to be able to step up and contribute in other ways to help Arizona win games. Mm-hmm. Brandon Randolph isn't always going to be on. Ryan Luther isn't going to have very many double-doubles this year, but he needs to contribute in other areas, whether that's, you know, helping on the offensive glass like he showed he can do tonight, whether it's knocking down a three in a big situation where they're fumbling for the ball and trying to get a shot up as time's expiring. You know, Ryan Luther is that kind of guy that can kind of be put into weird situations and knock down a shot or go be aggressive and crash the glass and get a board. But you're right. I mean, he came up big Saturday night when he hasn't been all year and they need him Saturday and he stepped up. So
absolutely.
Justin Coleman, I also want to circle back to, again, big night Saturday, with his late aunt in mind, but I think Justin Coleman's been underused this year in the sense that he's not producing enough on offense.
Underused?
Yeah, I mean, he's been okay. Underused because he's not, I mean, he had the game's opening three against Oregon on the opening possession. I mean, less than 20 seconds into the game, he had the three. And then I don't think he took another shot until maybe the second half. I think he attempted 3 more threes that night, finished like 1 of 4 from the floor, and all of them were 3-pointers. And then against Oregon State on Saturday night, he didn't get going until the second half. I mean, he attempted 1 shot in the first half, I believe,
yeah,
and didn't get going. When Justin Coleman, and you saw it in Maui, I'll go back to Maui, he had his best games. I mean, that was when Justin Coleman was at his best. Aside from the three, what game did he knock down that three?
It was at Iowa State?
Not in Maui. He did it, hit it at McHale Center just before the Christmas vacation. Do you remember who that was against?
Oh, it was UC Davis, I believe.
Yes. Yeah, hit the game-winning shot or game-tying. Was it game-winning? Hit a huge shot against UC Davis, and he can do that. But before that, I think the last big contribution he made on offense was in Maui, and he was at his best because he was scoring. And, you know, he was named to the first team All Maui Invitational and, you know, Arizona won a couple big games because of him and one big game because of him, I guess Iowa State. But again, I mean, when he's scoring, he brings another dimension to this Arizona offense because you look at Brandon Williams and you look at Brandon Randolph and the only real contributions that they're going to bring on offense, on a good night are going to be from beyond the arc. If they're not shooting well, they're not going to produce much offense. And then when I go back to saying, what are you doing for me? You know, if you're not scoring, what else are you doing for me on the court? They haven't provided much. Dylan Smith's another guy who kind of fits into that category because he does a lot when he's not scoring. He rebounds a lot. He plays defense a lot. He has a lot of attributes that I think Sean Miller likes to utilize, even if Dylan Smith's not scoring. Mm-hmm. Justin Coleman isn't just a 3-point shooter. So when he is, you know, dashing through, he's kind of a short, shifty guy like Parker Jackson Cartwright was, only he's a better scorer, a lot better mm-hmm. scorer. He's physical, he's stronger inside, and when he's scoring, I think it brings another level to the Arizona offense because they're not just relying on the three. Then he can get inside, he can create space for guys on the outside like Randolph and Williams when they are hot. And you know, when Lee and Ryan Luther and Chase Jeter are going, it's easy to get them freed up inside when Justin Coleman's cutting through the lane. So I think Justin Coleman needs to shoot more. I think he needs to be more aggressive against his own defense, in getting the ball inside, because not many players at Arizona can do that this year or in years past. I think Justin, that's how they need to utilize him. And whether that's a confidence thing, I mean, I find that hard to believe because he hit that big shot against UC Davis and he's had nights like tonight where, he went 5 of 10 from the field, 3 of 6 from three. So he's capable of it. Mm-hmm. I think he just needs to do it more.
Absolutely. And you know, in order to break the infamous zone, you have to be able to get into the lane. That way it causes the tension. You kind of pull defenders in, and then you can kick it out and have great three-point shooting. Mm-hmm. Oregon.
Especially against the zone.
Especially against the zone. Oregon played zone, mm-hmm. and Arizona was awful from beyond the arc.
Couldn't knock anything down, couldn't get the ball inside. They were terrible.
It's a bad recipe. Mm-hmm. It's a bad recipe. So I think with Justin Coleman, if they can continue that game plan and have the Brandons be able to knock down shots along with Dylan Smith, I think Arizona's going to be just fine. Speaking of Dylan Smith, mm-hmm. Sean Miller said that the game plan moving forward, they're going to keep Dylan Smith as Arizona's starting power forward, which is crazy because
6 foot five.
Five. 6'5". And he's,
how many 6'5 people are sitting on their couch listening to this podcast right now thinking, you know,
man, I got to play power forward
people,
for you,
people over 6'5". How many did 6 foot 10 guys are sitting at home thinking, there's a 6'5 guy at the four.
But what's the outlook of the Pac-12 right now? Because now that all the games are finished, the conference standings are all intact right now. And currently, Washington, still the undefeated team in Pac-12 play. They're 5-0 right now with Arizona right behind them at 5-1. ASU right behind them at 4-2. Then you have Oregon State, UCLA, USC all tied at 3-2. Utah 2-2, Oregon at 2-3, Stanford at 2-4, and then you have Colorado, Washington, and Cal followed up right behind them. So, Dom, I got to get your thoughts real quick. How do you assess the Conference of Champions right now?
You can't. You can't assess it. You can't. There is no order to the conference this year. Anything can happen. Washington can get swept next week at the Oregon schools, and
and then they'll be like sixth or seventh.
Exactly. I mean, there's no telling what. I mean, Arizona's going to UCLA and USC next week. Justin, you told me this before we came on tonight. I mean, they can theoretically get swept next weekend and fall back. I mean,
like eighth.
Yeah. I mean, if the chips fall in the right place, they can fall back. I mean, if Utah wins a couple games, Oregon wins a couple, I mean, they can drop that far. So there's no order to the Pac-12 right now. It's impossible to predict, but Washington 5-0. Justin, when's the last time they started 5-0? Give me your best guess.
Washington?
Yep.
Nate Robinson days, 2003, 2004.
You got to go back 20 years before that, the last time they started 5-0.
Since Nam.
Pretty much. Close enough. Like a little bit after Nam. But 1983-84 was the last time that Washington was 5-0. So
1983-84. So that
1983
was 1983-84, yep. So when Lute Olson was just getting things started here at Arizona.
Yep, exactly. So it's been a while for Washington, and they're 5-0. They look like the best team in the Pac-12. You know, if
and
you
they
want,
they play defense.
They played exactly. I was just getting that. They played defense, possibly better than anyone else in the conference. I still like what Oregon can do. Oregon State has played well in sports, but Washington plays defense. They're consistent. They can lock down. It's going to be tough for teams like Arizona who score in spurts. Again, if they catch Arizona on a bad night, if they catch Brandon Williams on a bad night, it's going to be hard for Arizona to keep up with them, because Washington's got a lot of weapons. So I like them. I think they're the clear favorite right now. And again, if we haven't explained well enough how out of order, out of sorts the Pac-12 is, we were saying this about Arizona a week ago, that they were the clear favorite. I still throw them in that category. I like yes. Arizona. Oregon, I'm still not convinced, is going to have this bad of a year. I think they bounce back even after a loss against ASU. The LA schools are going to be tough, but I don't think they threaten for top four seeds, really. Mm-hmm. Oregon State's still good. Arizona State, I think, is still the most physical, I don't know what the word for them is. If it's talented, or they're the most talented team from top to bottom. I mean, between Dort, Cheatham, I mean, they're so good. Arizona State is so good, but for some reason they are dominating the Pac-12 like they should. I mean, it should theoretically be Arizona State, Washington, and everybody else. Mm-hmm. Arizona too.
Mm-hmm. ASU, I feel like they're the team that has, like, all their players are all the same height. But they just punch you in the mouth. Like, they're all
so physical.
They're all guys that are like 6'7", and then they just beat the living daylights out of you. I almost cussed right there on the podcast.
Living daylights.
I almost said the sugar honey iced tea word. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcats podcast. Again, the Arizona Wildcats taking down the Oregon State Beavers at McHale Center. Up next, the Cats going to La La Land, going to Los Angeles to play USC on Thursday, and then UCLA on Saturday.
LeBron James.
Oh, you just had to throw in
LeBron James.
Just had to throw in LeBron. We're talking about LA right now.
We can bring up LA on the podcast. We cannot bring in a LeBron reference. LeBron James. LeBron James.
That'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. By the way, don't forget to like us on Facebook, follow the Wildcaster on Twitter, follow us on Instagram, download the app that's available on the App Store and Google Play, and also subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
For all your goodins.
For all the goods.
All the goods.
For Dom, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.